accession number 10897, reel 2.
Wing Commander Grice, reel 2.
As it happened, that afternoon, the King was due to come down to Biggin Hill to pin medals on those of us who'd been awarded DFCs, of whom I was one. And poor Jimmy Davis was another. And it wasn't till I got back to Biggin Hill and we were chatting together that we suddenly realized that Jimmy Davis of 79 Squadron hadn't come back. And he was the only pilot who didn't come back. So he was the chap I saw dive into the channel.
How can you account for his unalert behavior?
I can't. It's always puzzled me. It's a great mystery. I mean, it was perfectly possible that he'd attacked an ME-109, got rid of it, or even shot it down, and thought, well, that's that, and had set course for home. I mean, if we'd been involved in a battle, you never thought of getting together again with the rest of your squadron. I mean, the battle was over. You had probably fired all your ammunition, and the sooner you got home and rearmed and refueled, the better. So you didn't ever think of joining up again with the rest of your squadron. They'd disappeared anyway. So he probably thought the battle was over, but there'd been a lurking ME-109.
Can we go back to the German attack of May the 10th on France and the Low Countries, and can you tell me, step by step, what you remember of your own involvement in that?
I think it was on May the 11th, or it could have been May the 12th, we had our first operational instruction, which was to take off, fly over to Holland, and attack the German aircraft that had landed on the Hague aerodrome. So off we went, rather excited. How green we were. We flew at 10,000 feet, so well within AHAC range, and didn't seem to worry anyone. But where was the Hague? I mean, we hadn't sort of flown over the continent before, and we'd been equipped with maps which measured, I suppose, 2 feet by 2 feet, which covered the whole of Europe. Holland, Denmark, Belgium, France, Spain. So you could imagine Holland occupied about 2 square inches of the map, and although the Hague was mentioned, where was the airfield? So we flew around, didn't take all that long until we suddenly saw an airfield. So in this beautiful squadron formation, we dived down, and as we were diving down, we looked around. There wasn't an aircraft to be seen that hadn't been burnt out. So of course we didn't fire our guns, we just flew across the airfield very fast, weren't shot at, formed up again, came home. And it wasn't until I think a day or two later that we were told that this particular airfield had been recaptured by the Dutch some hours before we got there, and of course they had set fire to all the Junkers 852s that had landed there. So that was a very abortive trip. Then, of course, we were sent on fighter sweeps over France. Patrol Saint-Omer at 12,000 feet was a typical sort of order. And I suppose it was very early on, May the 13th or May the 14th, that we actually met the enemy for the first time. Frightening experience it was for me. There we were. It was a lovely day, sun was shining, with lots of cumulus cloud around. And we just skirted one big lump of it, when there in the distance, it was a sight that I shall never forget. The sky was full of aircraft. And in the space of a split second, a hurricane had flown past me in flames. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw an ME-110 climbing with a parachute wrapped round its tail, and a poor unfortunate airman had still attached the parachute. In another split second, I mean, I was looking everywhere, up, down, sideways, mostly backwards, because, you know, one always was very conscious of the fact if anyone was going to shoot you down, it would be from your back. And on one of the forward looks, I suddenly saw an ME-110, literally only about 300 yards ahead. And I'd already switched the gun button to fire, so I eagerly started pointing towards the ME-110. And I thought, well, I'd better have one quick look behind. And I looked behind. Horror of horrors, there was another ME-110, 300 yards behind me. We were both turning gently to the left, obviously about to fire on me. Well, you don't hesitate in those sort of circumstances. It was a case of the stick hard over, full right rudder, and I was into a screaming dive in about a fifth of a second. By the time I'd pulled out, there wasn't an aircraft to be seen in the sky anywhere. One of the most peculiar things about dogfights, and I learnt this from First World War fighter pilots, one moment the sky is full of aircraft, the next moment there isn't one to be seen. It's an extraordinary phenomenon. Anyway, seeing no friend or foe in the sky and feeling very frightened and out of breath, I dived into the nearest cumulus cloud to get my breath back and came out the other side, still nothing to be seen, and flew home. At least I'd survived. My particular pal in the squadron, Millie the Moocher, hadn't been so lucky. He was shot down. And for him, 5 years as a prisoner of war lay ahead. And the unfortunate thing was he was wearing a pair of my shoes at the time, which was one size too small for him. Bad luck. Well, that was the first time. And thereafter, on these various patrols, we nearly always met up with 109s who were flying around protecting the troops underneath and protecting their bombers too.
Which parts were you patrolling over?
Well, Saint-Omer was a favourite spot, Lille, and we did that until Dunkirk, of course, when the patrol line became Dunkirk. For us, Dunkirk was a disappointment. We only saw the enemy once. Other squadrons were engaged pretty well every time they went over there. I suppose the answer is the fighter command couldn't keep up constant patrols, There were gaps between patrols of one or two squadrons, and in the gaps the bombers came. Or alternatively, you were flying at, let's say, 12,000 feet or 15,000 feet or 18,000 feet, and the bombers were either above you or below you, and you never saw them.
What did the beaches look like at Dunkirk?
Well, we never really flew low enough to see. We were always never less than about 12,000 feet, the height the bombers were expected to fly at. But as I say, we missed them.
So the British Army on the beaches probably wouldn't have seen you or recognised you as RAF.
That was the trouble. I remember I got shot down in France. I can come to that later. And I had a bit of... This was after Dunkirk. And I had a bit of trouble getting back to England. And I was walking, waiting for a train at Evre, just south of Rouen, when two army privates came walking towards me. And I expected to pass them, of course, but they barred my way and said, "Where the effing hell have you Air Force chaps been?" Which was a bit sort of off-putting. And they really were quite aggressive. And I said, "Well, we've been around, and I was shot down yesterday." And that made a difference. They realised I'd been in action. And they got a little bit more friendly after a time. But I'm not a bit surprised that they didn't love the Air Force very much, because they hadn't seen the Air Force in action.
So, can you tell me how you did get shot down after Dunkirk?
We'd been sent to patrol Abbeville, I think it was. We'd taken off from Biggin Hill, and we crossed the coast at the mouth of the Seine, I suppose. And suddenly, 2 or 3 miles ahead, we saw some... Oh dear, what were they? Big black bombers.
Heinkels?
Heinkels. Heinkel 111s. About a dozen of them, flying in a very loose formation, crossing our bows. And inevitably, the little cloud of ME-109s above them and behind them. Well, we swooped on the bombers. I was leading a section of three, yellow section. Yellow section was slightly behind. There were nine of us. Red section led by Michael Crossley, and blue section led by Peter Brothers. And by the time I was within half a mile of the bombers, of course the ME-109s were taking a very keen interest in these hurricanes. So we had to break away and deal with the ME-109s, and after a little aggressive manoeuvring, the two that had seen me and my section, the four of them that had seen my section, had lost heart and were flying away. So meanwhile I'd lost touch with my number two and number three, so I was alone and had to catch up the bombers. Well, a Heinkel wasn't all that slow, and the Hurricane wasn't all that fast, so it must have taken me at least 2 or 3 minutes to catch up, by which time the Heinkels, which had been flying in no sort of formation, had got together. And the nearest Heinkels were three flying in Vic formation, quite close formation. Because I hadn't got the speed to climb up and dive down, I approached comparatively slowly from the rear at their level and opened fire on the port engine of the left hand one, and I got in a nice long burst when there was a bang, and immediately my cockpit filled with vapour. My eyes started to sting, and I could smell glycol, so I knew exactly what had happened. One of the gunners in one of the other Heinkels had put a bullet through my radiator, which meant that the glycol was pouring out. So I broke away and looked at my oil temperature gauge, and it was going up at a rate of knots. So obviously all the coolant had drained out of the engine. So being slightly afraid of fire, I switched off and glided in the same direction that the bombers were taking, which was almost due south, and knew that I had to do a belly landing in a field somewhere. And I just went on and on, gliding down until there was a nice large field, and I did a belly landing in the field. No excitement. I mean, a belly landing is a belly landing. It's all very quick. And I got out and wondered what the hell to do. And suddenly a little French agricultural worker came running across the field, shook me by the hand, gabbling away in French, not my strong point. And I got out my map, this map of the whole of Europe, and said in my schoolboy French something like, Où est ici? Where is here? He looked at the map and his finger went all over it. He suddenly put a finger on a spot that was not very far from Rouen. So I said very politely, merci. And at that precise moment, I landed in a field near a road. A car drew up and a woman got out. Could have been the farmer's wife. Walked across, started talking to me in French. It all went over my head because my schoolboy French wasn't up to that. So she motioned me to come with her, and we went into the car, and she drove a little way to the local gendarmerie, where she gabbled away to the local gendarme. And eventually, I think the gendarme said, well, you'd better take him back to his aircraft, because she said, come with me again. And we got back into the car, and she did take me back to my aircraft. Well, that was, as it happened, quite a good thing, because as we stopped on the road by the field, I saw two British Army chaps, one an officer, walking rather gently and carefully around my aircraft. I think they expected to find a body in it. So I walked across the field and said, hi, and they looked round at the start. And typically English, I mean, we shook hands, and I said who I was, Pilot Officer Grice, and this was Captain somebody or other. And they said, oh, poor bad luck, poor chap, come with us. And they took me into the wood. Well, there was a whole regiment of the British Army with their guns, big guns. I don't know what 20-pounders would they have been. I mean, artillery, not rifles. And I was introduced to the colonel and heard their story. They had started their war in Belgium, I think, and had been withdrawing. But instead of withdrawing to Dunkirk, they'd withdrawn to the south. First of all, by day, but of course had been shot up, So they were only moving by night. And here they were hidden in the wood because it was daylight. And they'd had a most perfectly miserable last 3 weeks or month. And they really were rather depressed. And they were a little bit envious when I told them that I'd been in England only a couple of hours beforehand, and that I would be back in England as soon as I could find any air force to fly me home again. So they said, "What are you going to do?" So I said, "Well, I'd like to get on the move." And they offered me a car and a driver to take me either into Rouen, about 12 miles away, or to, would it have been Le Tréport, which was where they were making for, because they were making for a port to come back to England by ship. Well, I thought it would be a good idea to go to Rouen rather than to the west, because from Rouen I could, if I couldn't find any air force there, catch a train southwards. So off we went, and I was deposited at the town major's office in Rouen, where I saw the town major, who said, "Well, you'll better hang on here, and we do occasionally see the air force. But if they don't turn up, I'll give you a ticket for a train to Le Mans, which was 70 miles further south, and you might find the air force there." So I waited and waited. I may say that I'd been shot down at 8:30 in the morning.
Do you know the date?
It was June the 8th, 1940. We'd been woken up at 3 o'clock and had been at readiness at 3:30 a.m. that day, and we'd taken off, I suppose, at just after 7 a.m. And I was shot down at 8 o'clock that morning. So here I was in the town major's office at, I suppose, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, not having had any lunch. And a boiled egg at 3:15 in the morning seemed a long time beforehand. And I was looking idly out of the window when up rolled a service car, and two people got out, an RAF padre and another pilot. So I, seeing a friendly face, was tremendous, so I roared out to greet them, and met another pilot officer called Sylvester, who was actually stationed in France in a hurricane squadron. He'd been shot down too the day before and had been taken to the town major's office, where he'd met the RAF padre, who said, "I'll take you to your base," which happened to be Rouen. And they'd just come back from Rouen, which was the aerodrome the Heinkels we'd just fired at had bombed, and his squadron had gone. So the padre said, "Well, you'd better borrow my car and a driver and motor around and see if you can find your squadron." So I said, "May I come too?" And Sylvester, of course, said, "By all means." So off we set, doing a great big loop south of Rouen. But no luck, we never found his squadron. We finished up at this little village of Evra late in the afternoon, when the RAF driver said, "I'm afraid I've got to go back to Rouen now. I've got to leave you here." So the only thing to do was catch a train from Evra southwards to Le Mans, see if we could find any air force there. So we stayed the night at a pub in Evra, and were having breakfast the next morning. Fortunately, Sylvester, because he was stationed in France, had lots of French francs. I didn't have anything. So he bought us a room for the night and a meal and breakfast the next morning. And we were in the middle of breakfast when we suddenly heard the noise of a lot of aircraft in the sky. And Sylvester, who'd heard this noise before, said, "They're German bombers." And we rushed to the window, just about got to the window, and we heard thump, thump. And one was really quite close, because the whole hotel shook, and the dust came up. And suddenly I heard him say, "Come on, quick!" And he was dashing from the room down to the car park, going from car to car. And I looked on in puzzlement. And suddenly he leapt into a car. He said, "Here's one with the keys in." And I got the message. He was going to steal a motor car and get mobile. But at that precise second, out came the chef with a little suitcase, and this happened to be his car. Because he started roaring away in French at Sylvester, who got out of the car very calmly and said, "Bonjour, monsieur," walked off. Then he said, "There must be a garage round here. Come on, quick." And we were out in the main street in Evra in no time at all, looking for the garage. And suddenly we saw a petrol pump. We ran to this garage, and he went in. There were half a dozen cars there, and he found a little Fiat 500, a tiny little motor car, again with the ignition keys in. And he leapt in, turned the ignition on, the engine fired, and he said, "Come on, quick, jump in." And we were away down the main street in Evra. I may say there wasn't a Frenchman, man or woman, to be seen, not a car to be seen. I mean, everyone had gone to ground because of the bombing. And we were out of Evra in no time at all, driving south, again with a view of finding his squadron. He had one or two ideas where they might have gone to, and one of them was, well, I can't remember the name of the place now. Anyway, we were driving along the road, and suddenly we saw an airfield, aircraft on it. So we quickly went in, and would you believe it, it was the headquarters of the Allied Expeditionary Air Force, with Air Vice Marshal Arthur Barrett in charge. And this was at Dreux, somewhere south of Evra, because the headquarters, of course, had been moving almost every day, and this was where they had landed up on June the 9th, 1940. Well, Sylvester, of course, was very disappointed not to find his squadron there, but he was told where to find them. So he went off in the little Fiat, and I was left there, having spoken to the Air Vice Marshal, who said, "You're very lucky. A DH Rapide has just arrived, which will be flying back to England tonight. I'll put you on board, because I'm sure you want to get back into action as soon as possible." I said, "Thank you very much, sir." And about an hour later, I and others boarded this DH Rapide, and off we went. It was piloted by somebody called Bill Ledley, who'd been with Imperial Airways as a pilot before the war. And of course, being an Imperial Airways pilot, it was a very court.